I'm going to present today is just the Southern Great Plains, one of our plans for developing and managing winter canola in our region. And a lot of this research that I'm going to talk about today is supported by the USDA through the NIFA, the Supplemental and Alternative Crops Competitive Grants Program. And I want to mention that this isn't the only source of funding for what's going on in the Southern Great Plains, and this is only a small portion of what's going on. There's also a lot of outside research out of this, outside of this project that's going on through universities like Oklahoma State as well, but I won't be presenting any of that today. Primarily focusing on this this plan for developing winter canola in the Southern Great Plains. So our research objectives, that the top there is basically a mission statement for this project, and I'm not going to read it to you. You can go ahead and read that. But I do want to point out our three research objectives, and we really have three objectives that we're focusing on. We have a breeding aspect that I'm heavily involved with. We have a production management aspect to develop cropping systems for these new varieties that we're developing, as well as working with other commercial varieties that are available in the region. And then we also have an extensive extension component to this, and taking the technology to the field to share with growers. These are the people that are involved with our current project in the Southern Great Plains. We have a pretty broad interest group, a lot of heavy emphasis again on cropping systems and trying to develop new ways to utilize winter canola in our cropping systems. And I just, rather than putting all these people on the front slide where it's hard to read, I wanted to just acknowledge them in a slide because it's really a team effort in trying to develop this crop in the Southern Plains. And all of these people contribute, but what I'm going to focus on today is just some of the stuff that's going on at Kansas State. And you'll hear from some of these other people throughout this conference. One of the first outputs of our breeding objective is the release of new winter canola varieties, and we had a new variety released here this summer in 2010, and we named this variety Riley. Manhattan, Kansas is in Riley County, so that's why we selected that name. But Riley is a conventional open-pollinated variety that has shown quite a bit of consistency across the Southern Great Plains, and in Table 1 here, I just averaged over the last 3 years the yields for Riley compared to three of the other releases out of our program. And Riley seems to perform well in both stressed and in high-yielding environments. We have seen excellent yields for Riley in New Mexico, areas of high elevation and heavy irrigation, as well as Wyoming, another high elevation, heavy irrigation area. One of the major characteristics of Riley is its oil content. One of the reasons why we released it is that compared to Wichita, one of the most widely grown winter canola varieties, Riley has around 3.3% higher oil content than Wichita when Wichita was released back in 1999. And in Table 2, I just summarized some of the oil data over the locations over the last 2 years for Riley. And we're going to continue, I believe, to focus on developing new OP varieties as we continue to introduce winter canola in this area. We need high-quality certified seed stocks for these growers to be growing, and varieties like Riley have competed fairly favorably with some of the new hybrids that are coming online. And I think it's important to have affordable seed stocks for growers, first-time canola growers, who want to begin to experiment with this crop in their systems. One of the other breeding objectives I have is developing winter canola varieties for dual-purpose uses. Again, we're introducing winter canola into an area that's that grazes winter wheat in the fall and in the spring. And when we first started looking at winter canola, some of these individuals who were interested in growing the crop asked if could canola be grazed. And some of the questions we've had are, when is the right time to graze winter canola, and what are the effects on yields? And are there any genotypic differences between the varieties that we're developing and commercial varieties that are available? And I have a poster that details a lot of this information downstairs, so if you're interested in learning more about this particular topic, I suggest go down and take a look, because I've also summarized some of the forage quality data for winter canola. But from these figures, we do see there is a significant reduction in winter survival when we graze. The treatments that we used were a pre-killing freeze, a post-killing freeze, no grazing, and then spring grazing. And the reason why I picked a pre- and a post-freeze grazing treatment is a number of the producers that have first grazed this crop have told us that the cattle don't pay any attention to it until we get a killing freeze, and it just seems to be more digestible. And in fact, from the data that we've collected over the last couple of years, we've shown that digestibility does increase after a post-killing freeze. But it doesn't matter when the canola is grazed, either pre or post, you're still going to see a reduction in winter survival. And you're also going to see around a 30 to 50% yield reduction in final grain yield if you graze. But one of the interesting facts that we've seen is that there are some genotypic differences. KS4022 is an experimental line out of our program that has an extremely prostrate growth pattern. And it seems when we do these simulated grazing studies to avoid some of the effects of, say, simulating cattle pulling the crown out of the ground, they're pulling the root structure out of the ground. And so I do feel that there's some potential with the varieties like KS4022 that have that prostrate growth habit to be potential dual-purpose varieties. We did have our first major incidence of blackleg in the region this past year. Last fall was like the perfect storm for developing blackleg. We're starting to reach kind of that critical mass of acreage. We're up around 100,000 acres now. And we do believe that blackleg's been present prior to last year, but we had very cool, cloudy, and damp conditions. And we had a fairly significant outbreak across central Oklahoma into southern Kansas. We are fortunate now that the varieties that we are growing do show some tolerance to blackleg. And this is data that's been collected for us at Plains, Georgia, looking at some of the commercial entries in the National Winter Canola Variety Trial, a trial that is coordinated by Kansas State. And these are the most commonly grown winter canola varieties in our region, and you definitely see a difference in the years, but you can also see that in the years where blackleg isn't very severe, most of our varieties are fairly equal in their tolerance to blackleg. In a year like 2008 in Plains, where they had a significant incidence of blackleg, you see a little bit more separation between the varieties. But we feel fortunate overall that what we have thus far is fairly tolerant to blackleg. But it is something that we're going to continue to focus on and search for germplasm sources to increase the level of resistance in our breeding material. This is some work that I'm working on with our cropping systems agronomist at Kansas State. Farmers are interested in growing winter canola no-till, and we've had questions about, are there certain varieties that perform better in no-till compared to tillage, and what is the effect of planting date when you throw that factor in as well. So in the upper left-hand corner here, we have yield means for date by genotype. And this is across both tillage and, these are means across tillage. In this study, we used eight varieties, one experimental variety, again, KS4022, thinking that that prostrate growth habit would give an advantage in no-till. We actually had five planting dates. We only got four planted, but I only reported two here because our last two planting dates had some issues with stand establishment and weed problems. But this is one location in Kansas, and again, only 1 year's data. But we do know that September 1 for that area is, for most varieties that we're growing now, are that's about the typical time, optimal time to be planting the varieties. Looking at tillage by genotype across planting dates, we do see just three cultivars here that show some advantage in yield when planted in a no-till versus till. This is a minimal disturbance no-till as well. There's no coulter on the front moving residue. And as you've heard in previous by previous speakers today, that removing the residue is pretty significant when it comes to improving winter survival. But this leads us to believe that there may be some varieties out there, either commercially available or ones that we may develop someday that could be used in a no-till situation. Only one showed a significant increase, this Kador variety. One of the other questions that we had is, if we plant no-till earlier, are we going to see improved winter survival? And from this 1 year of data, we really just showed that planting date really doesn't have much of an effect on survival, that our two middle planting dates here didn't show any significant difference in survival. And then breaking it out by genotype, by tillage, across planting date, in terms of winter survival, we didn't show any cultivars that had a significant increase in winter survival in no-till. So through that study, we also conceived the idea of why don't we breed varieties specifically for no-till. So in 2010, I selected 150 lines out of our breeding material that had what I call ideal plant structure, prostrate growth habit, and excellent winter survival. And we just planted them in a no-till trial, replicated twice. And we hit the ideal planting date with ideal moisture and good conditions in the fall, and we actually didn't see any winter kill in our no-till, which, you know, if we could rely on 1 year's data, that'd be great, but we need to repeat this a couple of years to see if this is in fact the case. But I know with another year's data, we're going to see some differences in winter survival. But I do like these pictures here showing the significant impact that stubble does have on winter kill in our commercial varieties. And this data that we, or this study that we conducted previously led us to work on this research topic. One of the other objectives of our program is coordinating the National Winter Canola Variety Trial. This is a tool that plant breeders, agronomists, and marketers of winter canola use to promote winter canola across the United States. Over the years, you can see in this trial, we've had quite an interest as the number of entries have increased since we started managing it back in 1998. It's a valuable resource and one that we're going to continue to promote and use, and hopefully we'll continue to develop new varieties and be able to show that their value is important in this trial. One of the other aspects, again, is our extension effort. And as you can see in Kansas, we like to stand out in the field in circles with our producers and talk about winter canola. I feel that this is an important tool to get out in the field and really hold the hands of these growers that are trying to develop this crop and their cropping systems. And I hope we can continue to have success through these different opportunities. And with that, I'll take any questions or be around after word to to visit. So, thank you.